Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Hey everyone, welcome to the newest Mormon Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon. We are going to do something that I have a feeling that many in these podcast communities have done in their own minds, and that is we are going to talk about Mormon missions, and especially if you've served a mission, that process of going through the reframing of this experience, whether it was a good experience, a bad experience. For most of us, it was a pivotal experience in our lives. It marked a certain period of time, a certain type of belief or church experience. And yet, with passing years, we usually grow, hopefully, in the direction of greater depth and insight and wisdom, and we want to go knock some sense into that missionary self of ours. Or we've perhaps started to feel like, wow, that was a moment where I wish I hadn't actually gone, or, you know, you feel some sort of lack of integrity with your mission experience or things like that. So we're gonna wrestle with all that, and there's a bigger palette than even what I just said there. But I'd love to bring on the guests and have them introduce themselves to you, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit more before launching in. But we're going to welcome back to the podcast, first of all, our good friend Derek Clements. Derek, welcome back.
Hello. Thanks so much, Dan. Excited to be here.
You are famous in many different circles. You were on our podcast once before, and you run your own two podcasts.
I'm a podcast fiend.
Tell us.
Well,
it started
my podcasting life started with the Pixar podcast, because I'm a big Pixar nerd. But last year I started a storytelling show in Provo, where I live, go to BYU, called The Porch, and I do a podcast sharing some of those stories as well. So,
right, and Pixar honored you recently.
They flew me out to this cool press junket. I got to see like the first 30 minutes of Brave, which comes out next month. I was basically kind of, if you know, I have a taste of the Celestial Kingdom now because I have been to Pixar. So that should tell people kind of where I'm coming from.
Congratulations, Ed. I was so excited for you when I heard that they were flying you out and showing you some neat treatment. So you deserve it. Just other quick things you mentioned, you're down in Provo, you're finishing up at BYU.
Yep, studying English. And I guess relevant to this conversation, I also teach English-speaking missionaries at the Missionary Training Center.
Right. That's the piece I wanted to bring out, too. So you've been doing that for how many years?
Pretty much since my mission. So I started my mission in 2006, came home in 2008, and I've been going strong. I'm just addicted to the Preach My Gospel manual, and so I can't get enough of it. Actually, I say that a little bit. It'll come out more kind of my feelings, so I'll just stop there. But
I wasn't sure if that was sarcasm or not.
Yeah. Love my job. Super happy to be there. I don't know if I share all the same views as some of my other coworkers and stuff, but I love all my coworkers, and yeah, it's a great job.
Great. Well, we're excited to hear, you know, from the trenches of the training center type stuff from you, as well as the other things. And you have an unusual background in the sense that you were sort of had a complex view through Mormon stories and whatnot before you even left.
Yeah. It was really great.
That'll be fun to bring up. TK, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm also here in Provo. I work on the student review, and I served a mission at Temple Square. I've been back almost a year.
Yes, you did serve there, and that's an interesting mission in and of itself, and I'm excited to have you. I've heard you sort of reflect a little bit here and there on some of the complex things that went on in your own brain, and as you've been wrestling with it since. So, yeah. So we've got you guys. Any more that you want to share about? You're nearly done with BYU and things too, and
yeah, we're both almost there.
Cool, good. And do you want to mention your career path arcs or majors, and again, no pressure.
Go ahead, Derek.
That's a good question, actually. I'm studying English, and I'm excited to see what comes of it. I feel good about where things are going, but I kind of have no idea about the future. So,
and then I've just been studying journalism with some forays into Arabic, which I was actually able to use on the mission, so that was pretty fun. So I don't know if initially I will delve completely into journalism. I'd kind of like to maybe do something in startup business and then retire, so to speak, into journalism.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, make your money first because you probably won't make it in journalism.
Right. No, that's exactly it.
Well, TK, you could do modeling, right? Because you went to Temple Square, isn't that?
I'm going to beat you.
The Temple Square hotties, yep. We'll talk about that a little bit. Anyway, well, thanks for being on. Thanks for being I love it when good friends are on with each other. And that is the case here with our third guest. And you two represent the recently returned yet complexified view of things. Rory Swenson and I will be the old men. And we've been friends for a good 10 years now, at least, Rory, wouldn't you say? And welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Would you introduce yourself a little bit? I know you're going to be a familiar name to those who've, you know, sort of been in these circles for a while. Even life circumstances have kept you, you know, away from being as active. But do you want to share a little bit about your background?
Sure. I had no idea that I would be one of the senior citizens on this podcast,
yeah,
but apparently I am. I served a mission in Georgia in 1990-92. And since then, I've been in business and healthcare. My background is technology and healthcare, and I'm currently in a company that does pharmacy services. My journey after the mission was one of typical activity. I spent quite a number of years with Sunstone. I chaired the board there for a few years and resigned from the board back in 2010. Blogged proficiently for a while and kind of explored my faith in that way. And now I find myself on a podcast with Dan Witherspoon.
Yep. And Rory's out here in Tooele County with me, and we just became fast friends and golf partners and all sorts of, we're connected still quite often.
That's interesting because during, you know, you have your outbound, we call it, at Temple Square. And I served in Georgia for several transfers, so I didn't know that you were there before me.
What areas?
I was in Atlanta North.
Okay.
So I served at the University of Georgia, and I also served in Dahlonega.
Okay, I was further south. I was in the Macon Mission. So.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and Rory has the experience, and so do I, actually. We both met our wives on our missions. Rory, yeah. she was in one of your areas. My wife was a fellow missionary in my mission. For those who may not remember my background, I served in Seattle, Washington Seattle mission from in 83 and 84. So I've been back 27 and a half years. So I'm the oldest. But Rory and I both had that that experience of meeting our wives there. So in some ways, we can never, when we get to that question, do you wish you had never went on your mission? You don't think we automatically have to say, no, we don't regret it. but we'll still add some complexity here and there, right?
Well, we can wrap it up right now.
Well, that'll be one of the things that we'll kind of get to as we work our way through our discussion here. But again, thanks everybody for being on. I love having you guys, and I just know this is going to be a wonderful conversation. We've had some good sharing ahead of time about things we might cover. So if you guys don't mind, I just asked each of you to think of a way within two or three, you know, minutes, or, you know, certainly can go a little bit longer, to share the story of your mission and, you know, just sort of the broad outlines of when, where, good experience, bad experience, and just kind of maybe tease some of the areas that you for sure want to make sure that we talk about today. So if you don't mind, we'll just go in the order that we had you all introduce yourself. So Derek, if you don't mind starting, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. And, you know, thinking back about the way that I introduced myself, I hope that I didn't come across as too goofy or anything, because I actually have very strong feelings about my mission and the missionary program, not totally positive, not totally negative, but definitely an important part of my life. I think For me, the story starts my freshman year at BYU. Up to that point, going on a mission was always just the plan, always just kind of the narrative that I was on. I was happy, you know, happy growing up at church. And you always hear people talk about how, you know, it was really on their mission that they gained their testimony, or their testimony became mature or something like that. And I think for me, it was actually before that, in the months that led up to my mission, I discovered Mormon Stories Podcast. This was like the beginning of Mormon Stories Podcast. John had just put them up. I would think I was one of the first listeners. And so here I am, this freshman at Deseret Towers, getting John DeLynn's wonderful tones on my computer through the BYU internet at Deseret Towers, and it's just kind of opened my mind to this whole sort of, I guess, you know, Sunstone sort of intellectual or questioning, yet sort of still faithful perspective. And it sort of fired a bunch of stuff in my brain. I didn't know whether to interpret it as, you know, anti, as something that I should shun. I even talked to my bishop about if he had heard of it. I kind of hoped that he would like say, "Oh yeah, I listen to Mormon Stories too, and it's totally great." But he had never heard of it. He did warn me that, you know, listening or reading stuff like Sunstone could be dangerous. And So I actually kind of stopped listening to the podcast for a little bit, but the damage had been done, I guess. My mind was cracked open to, I guess, just the idea that if the church is true, then learning about it could not hurt. And I kind of feel really grateful for this part in my life. I feel like it was a really transformative moment, because I recognized as a 19-year-old that I hadn't yet really made any big commitments to the church yet. I grown up my whole life, of course, and it would be very difficult to, you know, leave or anything with my whole family being in and everything. Not that that's what my goal was or is now, but I just kind of recognized that I hadn't yet gone on a mission, and I hadn't yet really made that commitment, and that I could still choose. I could still decide if this was really something that I wanted to do. And really, it had never been a question up to that point. So long story short, those few months, you know, between April and July when I left after I got my call, that was really the kind of thing that I would say is the game changer in my life. And I was talking to my girlfriend today about how she says that I refer to that period of my life more, you know, than I talk about even my mission, which I did love. I went to Brazil. The Recife mission was, for me, it was a great time. And I think the reason it was a good experience for me, at least one of the bigger reasons, is because I went on my mission kind of conscious of the possibilities of complexity, and that you know, truth might be bigger than I thought it was. That the traditional, I would say, the cultural aspects of the church may be disconnected in some way from what God even wanted. And so I guess having my mind open to that possibility led me to have a really successful mission. I loved it. And I'm 100% sincere when I – maybe if you have to say you're sincere, you know, are you really sincere? But I really am. I love my mission, and I love teaching at the MTC. I mean, I've had opportunities to kind of stop teaching there. I've been teaching there for quite a while. And I just don't want to. I just want to keep going, and you know, at some point it will end. But I have enjoyed my time there, and appreciate the opportunity to work with missionaries, kind of experiencing that same beginning part of their mission that was so important to me.
Cool. Well, there's a few things. You went to a Portuguese-speaking mission, but you're teaching English. Is that pretty common? I hadn't heard that much at the MTC.
Well, there's a Brazil MTC. So usually if you go to Brazil,
okay.
Straight there. So yeah, so there's not a lot of room for people that go to Brazil to teach Portuguese. I have done it a little bit. I've moved over to the Portuguese area a couple times, but my home is the English area.
Okay, cool. Second thing, you shared somewhat, I don't know how big a deal it was, but you were one of those people who had the experience of declaring, "I do not want to go to Brazil," and then getting called to Brazil.
Yeah, I did. And, And it was actually John DeLynn's fault, you know, to bring him up again. One of the, I think it was the first podcast episode that he released, which was just his mission story. And he talked about these crazy things of missionaries, you know, baptism crazy and talking. I don't remember exactly where he went, like Peru or somewhere, Guatemala. Yeah. So he, you know, and he tells the story of these missionaries that were baptizing, you know, 7-year-olds and 6-year-olds. And this just scarred my little mind. And I was like, okay, I want to go to like France where I don't even have to baptize people and I can just serve and be a good missionary and not even have to worry about it. Because I knew that in South America, there's a lot of, you know, baptisms and maybe not as much retention. So yeah, I did have that experience, although it didn't take me very long to feel good about it and feel like, well, you know, this is where I'm supposed to go. Then maybe I can help and contribute in a positive way.
Right. Good. Yeah. It does seem funny though. I had a cousin who said, you know, we grew up in San Diego and he goes, I'll go anywhere except for Tijuana, Mexico. And of course he gets called to the Mexico Hermosillo mission, which had Tijuana. And then what happened, and you know, he made peace with it too, but what happened then, visa trouble to Mexico. So he ended up going to Colorado for a couple of months before a visa came through to Chile. So he ended up not serving the place that he declared that he didn't want to, but it was just, it's always funny to me. It seems like that happens a lot. And then the final thing that kind of came out for me, Derek, is it'll be great to talk with you in this section of the podcast. I don't think I teased this in my opening, but you know, if and when the time comes that we have children, would we want them to go on a mission knowing what we know now, or at least thinking in the way that we think? Your experience of sort of having that preparation of thinking bigger than the culture, thinking the gospel can be deeper than sometimes what you hear, I'll definitely want to draw that out of you when it comes to that section too.
Great.
So cool. TK, would you share a bit about your time as a Temple Square hottie?
You all, I'm gonna like sign off now. You can do this podcast on your own.
I'll cut it out. So this will be the final time, but except I do want to talk about that pressure to look
at least
as that comes out of your emerges from your story. So
I jest. And obviously having served there, you have to have a sense of humor about that. So I think it's a little different being a woman in the church because you aren't that starry-eyed 19-year-old when you go, and it's not the same amount of social pressure. In fact, everyone pressured me not to go because, I mean, my brother-in-laws are pretty liberal-minded and were kind of just like, nah, you don't need that. You're just knowing that it would be tough, I think, was their main thought process. And I was dating someone at the time, and so my parents tried to sort of dissuade me, not because they wanted me to be married off at some young age, but because they saw it as a source of happiness and wanted me to be happy. So I did, for a variety of reasons, have that pressure not to go. And then also, I was at 21, I'd had a little more experience of that foray into, I guess you could say, alternative Mormonism, or set your roots into your adult version or phase of your faith. So it was certainly not with the sort of traditional, as I said before, starry-eyed, like, I'm off to save the world from their, like, darkness.
Right, right.
Because I mean, also I grew up in a place where there were no other Mormons, and I saw them as wonderful people and very fulfilled people. So I went in serving my mission very, very reluctant, because I didn't necessarily feel that passion, and then I knew it would be hard. I was suffering from undiagnosed depression, and ultimately I just saw it as a very sort of tacky form of proselyting, of sharing one's faith. I guess I should say proselyting is a tacky form of sharing faith, right, that I didn't want to be a part of.
Why the heck did you go?
I know, right? Because, you know, I was raised with a very close relationship with God and had to learn at a pretty early age how to communicate with Him. And He very clearly wanted me to go. There was no room. I was as commanded as any male in our church, just very personally commanded to go.
And so then, but probably without a whole lot of thought that you'd be at a visitor center, though, right?
Too. No, yeah, no. I thought that was the funniest thing in the world when I heard about that happening to other girls. Yeah, no, I didn't. Yeah, wow. I didn't see that coming. I actually always chose not to go to Temple Square because it represented like the heart of the traditional Mormonism that I so chafed against. And so, but I finally broke. And then 2 days later, I got my call to Temple Square. And I just had to laugh, look heavenward and laugh.
Very interesting. I imagine it'll come out more, but do you want to share any like sort of framing thought? Are you glad you went, you know, anything right now? You were commanded to go. You obviously had some experiences. I know you're in the middle still of a wrestle with it, but where do you want to share any of that kind of broader, just, you know, 1 minute overview of where you feel emotionally towards your mission now?
I feel emotionally like it was necessary for my eternal goal it was important for my spiritual development, but that it was not painless, and right. I certainly left with some bitterness in my heart that I'm still trying to weed out. And also, I became very tired on my mission, and it's actually gotten worse, and they can't diagnose me. So there's a lot of sort of like frustration that coming home off my mission that I should become so ill doing that service. But then some people don't come back from their missions, so I try not to complain too much. So there's a lot of facets, and I can't really come down in one place.
Right. And, you know, that's, I certainly, in my circle of friends, there's several people whose mission was a turning point in their health, and usually for negative directions. Yeah. So again, you represent another wonderful perspective that we'll dive into in mine as we go. Rory, Macon, Georgia.
Macon, Tell Georgia. Tell us. Yeah. Well, I grew up in a family that was, I would say, semi-active. We weren't really stalwarts in the ward. I typically attended because in a small town on Sunday when my friends would go to church, there wasn't much more to do. And so mission wasn't ever something that was in my plans. That changed shortly after high school. One of my close friends, who was very similar to me, never really talked about a mission, never really had any plans to serve one, up and decided to serve a mission. And it baffled me, quite frankly. But he went, and just after, he was a year older, just after I graduated, got news that he had been killed on his mission. He was shot. Would label it today a terrorist attack, and it shook me up. It shook me up quite a bit, and so that kind of set me on a course for the next 8-9 months of some personal exploration and trying to figure out what would drive him to go, and that really kind of set me on the path to my own conversion. And so I ended up in the mission field. I got my call and went to Macon, Georgia. Had interesting experiences.
You faced death, I remember, at least a few times, right?
Once had a gun pulled on us, but that was it. But, you know, what I found was a real tension there, because I felt like I was way behind the other missionaries, because I didn't grow up planning this. I didn't grow up preparing for this, and so I kind of embarked on a crash course of study. And when I got into the mission field, I was shocked at the reality of the mission field, And so, you know, there was this tension there. There was this feeling that, you know, through this conversion, I had my own mission to serve, and yet there was the struggles of missionary life. And so, you know, it was 2 years of incredible experiences, a lot of growth. It was also a lot of frustration and the tension that really taught me a lot about life and dealing with other people. I didn't have a real tough time coming back in after the mission. For me, it was 2 years, and as I got home, I got right back into life and moved on. But what I find is it's been a little over two decades now. I find that my perception of my mission changes as I change. And it's interesting to see how it reframes over the years. You know, at the time when I had my own conversion and I felt that strong pull, my testimony was such that, my conversion meant that everything, it was all wrapped up into one. So, you know, that means that everything is true. Obviously, as I've grown older and I've been involved with you and you've influenced me. No, just as you grow, you know what I mean. As you go through life, and you see the gray areas, and you see the things that you have to wrestle with, and the doubts come in. I see that more as a time not of my being called to do that work for anybody else but me. I see that as a time that I needed to be out there. Certainly, you mentioned that I met my wife out there, so that was a big part of my life. Is still a big part of my life.
Right.
But there's a lot more nuance now to the way that I look at those experiences that I had in that year leading up to my mission, and a lot more of personal reflection in saying, you know, this was important to me, and it was important in my life, and at the time, and at that time in my life, I see that God probably meant for me to do that, and he certainly could have used any other vehicle to teach me lessons or to help me grow, but that was my educational experience. That was my mission.
Yeah, terrific. And what you articulated there about your reflection on your mission changing as we change, that's exactly what this podcast is about. I really am looking forward to the comments and stuff after this is released, because I think that what we're doing here is what people are naturally doing out there in their own lives, however distant or close to their mission they are. But it's going to, I think it's an important process for us to think about, okay, how would I answer these questions? How do I respond? And so I'm excited that we're doing this topic. And by the way, I forgot to say thank you to Derek for, it was our conversations that led us to think of this topic to begin with. So thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. I want us to dive in on some of just the bigger questions and,
Dan, are you going to talk about your mission?
I mean, I certainly did with John, on my interview. People can go find that. I can't remember how.
There, go. We'll plug that.
Yeah, Mormon. In Mormon Stories, you could look me up. I was probably a year and a half ago, would you guys say? That was probably when my thing was. But no, my experience was fantastic. Of course, mine was different in the sense that I was just a few months short of 24 years old when I went. So I had sort of not a complexifying my Mormonism, background like it sounds like TK and Derek did. But, mine was sort of choosing my better self over my wanton self and letting it run things. And so I kind of went out in this full-blown mode of sort of a mature guy who had chosen, or who is now choosing to be a person, that was really going to contribute to the world and stuff like that. And so I had zero problems with the rules. I had a mission where, Seattle is a decent area. I ended up baptizing every month, for whatever that means, so I was never, in these times where we didn't have people to teach or didn't have somebody to share the gospel with. It's interesting, as I was listening to the three of you, nobody really mentioned, and maybe, I know Rory, maybe you sort of mentioned that it didn't. didn't happen when you said that the mission was for you. And TK, you said you knew that God wanted you to go. It was interesting to me that nobody mentioned, oh, there was so-and-so out there that I knew I was the only missionary that could reach. You know, you hear those experiences. Like, I'm called to this area for this person only. I had a few folks where I felt like, you know, it was my unique and strange combination that you know, might have been a big part of their conversion. But again, I really don't know the answer to that question either, if I was going for others or going for me. But, you know, what the things that I've kept are the things that have happened inside me and my experiences with the Spirit and, you know, prayer and, you know, having some pretty profound experiences open up to me. So we'll talk about everybody and their spiritual experiences as we go. But
Well, Dan, just to jump in real fast, I think what you just said just is an indication of what a huge cultural – I mean, missions are huge for Mormons. And just that's – you just said kind of one of those stories that we hear in those narratives – you call them folklore or, you know, if they're right. True or not. But there's so many that are associated with missions. I think that, you know, any study of Mormonism, any thoughtful sort of examination of it has to tackle this issue at some point because it's huge.
Yes, yes. And when you mentioned that it's one of the cultural memes or whatever it would be, wasn't there a conference address even just within the last two or three conferences where it was so-and-so, was it a general authority, was at a stake, and it was the guy who felt like his mission had been worthless, you know, and then, you know, somehow or other it came up that this guy had been this guy who felt like his mission was sort of the guy that baptized the ancestor of this general authority, or not the ancestor, but, you know, just the grandparent or the parent or anyway, there is that whole piece of it that does come up sometimes, isn't there? Did I step on your point there, Derek, or was I amplifying it?
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's
okay. Because I can cut that out if we need to. Anyway, I just want to start with kind of something I pre-primed with you guys, and that is more general. And you can certainly please illustrate with your own, you know, experiences as you do. But there's the big question that kind of comes, and I sense that Derek and TK, and I know Rory and me, you know, through our conversations, there's a sense that many in this podcast community, and I think the four of us here, are not really keen on saying the Mormon Church is the one and only true church, that happiness is only truly attainable through the gospel, that if you're going to handle the powers of heaven, it has to be through priesthood authority, etc. I'm just going to assume that that's the four of us here. And that's a different mindset than a lot of missionaries go into the field with. It's a different mindset than a lot of members of the church still have today, even, you know, years after their missions or just, you know, through the culture that they breathe. So if you're in a position, and I'll assume that a lot of our listeners are as well, to where the one and only true church doesn't really sing anymore, why would any of us ever even consider going on a mission or having our kids, you know, supporting our kids going on a mission? If it's not the one only true, why bother with missionary work? And so I'll just throw that out there to anybody that wants to take a swing at framing missionary work in terms of something other than salvation or the only plan of happiness.
Well, I know in my own case, while I am, I don't know, maybe among the alternative crowd, I'm a little more traditional, because I do believe that the ordinances in the Mormon faith are necessary, and also that they are beautiful opportunities of communion with God that I wish everyone could have. I believe that the priesthood was restored, and that with that comes things such as patriarchal blessings that have been a blessing in my life, and just father blessings. And all of those... combined with, I think, I really do believe that there is a prophet of God and 12 apostles, are things that if I were in another book of scripture, that if I were in another person's shoes, I would want to know about, and I would want to be able to evaluate for myself. And so as a missionary, I find our job one of distilling information that I believe everyone has a right to know.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying those things and not letting us assume, you know. So I actually can say with you amen on, you know, those particular, you know, claims or whatever you're saying. Can I ask you a question as far as...
Yep.
It's beautiful. It's wonderful. These are rich ways into the experiences that life is, you know, we're set up here in life to hopefully have, learn about God and whatnot. The exclusivity part, though, you already mentioned that prior to your mission, you already had got a sense that lots of people were happy and flourishing and having good lives prior to this. So I guess is it more like when it comes to the exclusiveness of the Mormon ordinances, is that where a testimony of temple work would come in for you? Or is it really there is a qualitative difference between the type of spirituality you can experience if you've had a Mormon ordinance versus just, you know, been converted and really walked a very serious spiritual path?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to qualitative experiences, that there's equal opportunity. Although I do believe that the gift of the Holy Ghost is a powerful tool, and that I feel like it is constantly working on us, even when we're not necessarily working on it being faith.
And this is qualitatively different for Mormons who have the gift rather than somebody.
Correct.
Who has it.
But ultimately. Okay. Ultimately, I believe that I stand with Joseph Smith in that closeness with God is largely based on correct understanding of who he and she are, is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that there are plenty of Mormons that worship a God I don't worship. Their God is so descriptively different, whereas there are many non-Mormons I know where I look at that and say, yeah, that's the God that has been revealed to me. And so I think ultimately it depends on your level of understanding of God, which I think has a lot to do with just effort and dedication and not ritual.
Very cool.
If I could jump in here for a second, from my experience, going back to this formative kind of time in my life when I was trying to figure my testimony out and what I believed, I think the biggest takeaway that I got from that experience was integrity, and that my experience with the Holy Ghost and what I perceived to be the Holy Ghost was really, really important. And I actually got experience. I would have questions, I would pray, and I would feel like I would get answers to things. And so I found it, you know, I could delve into questions and find answers that satisfied me at some point eventually. And so along with this integrity, I think comes came for me the realization that there's no way that I am personally going to know what other religions are like from firsthand. It's like you can say that I don't quite understand the claim that you know that you have something that other people don't have when you don't know the other people's experiences.
Right. Right.
And so I think for me, like, that's something that I've wrestled with for a long time. This notion of, do I believe that that exclusive authority claim? And I think that missionaries need to think about that, because it definitely is a tenet that is, you know, continues to be taught. But for me, I kind of find satisfaction with just recognizing that I'm not going to know other people's experiences. And so all I can say is the experiences that I've had with the restored gospel, they're good experiences and they're true to me. And that's kind of where I fall on that.
Right, and right there at the end, you match up a little bit on this general level with TK, in the sense of, hey, I'm out there, and I'm only witnessing to my experience, and here's information if you want about the Mormon Church, and you know, so why bother with missionary work? You know, you both have sort of taken it out of the level of souls are absolutely at stake if I'm doing this. And you're basically saying, here's what's happiness for me. Here's what spiritual experience has been for me. If you're attracted to it, I'm here to give you information. I'm here to teach you more. So does that seem fair as sort of at least a common?
Yeah, I would say that's fair. And it's something, let me put it this way. It's something that I have a hard time with, that it just doesn't seem that true to me, honestly. And so I have to find other reasons for why it's useful. And that's kind of where it comes down to me. It just doesn't feel true to me to say, you know, we have to do this because everyone else is absolutely depraved without us.
Right, right. Good. And I want to dive deeper in a couple of pieces you said. Rory, I want to throw this out to you at that general level of, you know, if there's no exclusive claim, why bother with missionary work?
Sure. Well, you know, certainly at this point in my life, I don't hold to the exclusivity. But one thing to remember is that even though we, you know, we have these more nuanced opinions or we're growing in our lives, we all had to go through this at some point. And so, you know, the question whether, you know, you'd want somebody to go or is it worth going at this point? Certainly, because, you know, there's more to it than just the truth claims of the gospel. As I look back, the people that I met and the people that I taught or that I related with and went through, you know, incredible experiences with, these were trying times in their lives. They were searching. They were looking for something. And to the extent that we were there and living that with them and helping them to reach out to something bigger and to somehow fulfill a need in their lives, that was valuable. And it was certainly valuable, I think, to them, even if they fell away, even if they never got baptized, even if they continued on in the church. Those experiences at that time were important, and they were important for both of us.
Right.
That sounds familiar.
Anything else at the super general level? Because otherwise I do want to take us into this ordeal of a mission. And, you know, it's a compressed 18-month or 2-year time in which you are immersed in, you know, different sort of things. You can focus on growth. You can focus on God. You can focus on, you know, what the heck is the Spirit and how do I relate to it? Is the, you know, you're asking the big questions and you're immersed in you know, the mega universal story, you know, for this 2-year period of time.
And but like at the same Laurie time, says, you're trying not to kill your companion. It's 18 months or 2 years of Mormonism dialed up to level 11. I mean, it is all the great things about Mormonism, but it's also, it amplifies all of the challenges of Mormonism. And so you're living in this world that is unlike any other. So you're getting those spiritual experiences, you're getting those promptings, you're getting the challenges that help you to grow that way, but you're also dealing with some really crazy people, and a lot of those crazy people are in the mission. You know, they're the ones that you work with every day, not just the ones you're meeting, and so you're dealing with a lot of things that you wouldn't otherwise deal with.
Yes.
Good point.
Good. Okay. So with all these as launching points, I want to say, let's just articulate the best we can from our own experiences as well as, you know, what you've gathered out there. What are the positive things about a mission? Because we're going to also talk about the negatives. In other words, there's things that can go so right and they can be so important and so long-term lasting in a very positive, beneficial way. So I want to concentrate on those first, knowing too that there's the problems of, you know, becoming a Pharisee with the rules, or, you know, this sort of sense of exclusivity that you're giving a message and stuff like that. So just with those as teases, let's go first of all into what's the great things that you're putting yourself in a position to learn that you might not learn as easily or as in a neat, you know, way, a neat package.
Well, let me just jump off what Rory said about amplified Mormonism. I think that's a great way of describing a mission. And I think whenever you amplify something or when you look at it more closely, it allows you to look at it more closely. And that's a good thing. You know, I feel like my mission experience and that sort of intense pressure of, oh no, my faith is becoming more complicated as my mission looms ahead. It was really my mission that made me ask those tough questions. It was my mission that made me really challenge myself when it comes to spirituality. That I don't think that I would have done if I was just doing the normal church-going experience. That amplification, I think, can bring out the negative things about your own faith and perspective, but it can also help you to see more clearly the good and the reasons why you may want to stick around in the faith.
Cool.
A similar vein, I guess, is that I saw more evidence on my mission for the claims. Well, not all the claims, but for the essential claims that I was making. So I saw evidence of prayers being answered. And I saw evidence of that some lives genuinely are improved through the Mormon conduit of faith. So I guess the ultimate reason I look back and am grateful that I went and that missions exist is because there are people out there who are looking for the information that we have. And so when those two come together, us and them, I think that's when the magic happens. It's just that often we're trying to make a lot of people into that person when they're not, if that makes sense.
Yes, yes. And Derek, you and I had a pre-conversation about us perhaps overestimating our ability to be persuasive, like we're going to be talking people into joining this church and things. And obviously that's happened in some of these Guatemala, you know, or some of these extreme things. But for the most part, what TK just said is true, isn't it? That they're looking too. They wouldn't be open. They have to come with some sort of openness to a change in their life.
Totally. It's funny when I look back on the experience, on my mission, and think everything was so immediate. Everything was so, like, all of the things that I was doing had instant results, and all of the results that were happening must have had instant starting points. And that, yeah, one thing that I said had this huge impact on another person. But I think reflecting on it now, I see that generally changes do take time. And there are actually, I mean, there are scriptural things in the Book of Mormon that talk about, you know, people, angels preparing people or whatever. So yeah, it's not just one companionship that is going to do all the persuasion. So yeah, good point.
Yeah. Rory, what would you jump in with as an initial? I want to keep coming back. I think we got a lot more to say in this area. But what does a mission and the compressed nature of it and the sexless nature of it, or all the different, you know, rules and, you know, no first names and just whatever the formalities, it concentrates something for you. And so what are some of the positives that you say?
Certainly, it puts you in a position to really have to figure out things for yourself. I mean, you're given these materials that you can teach, and at the time we were teaching out of the six discussion manuals, and so it was almost a script, and you know, you could perform that very well, but it also forced you to really come to terms with your relationship with God. It put you in a position to have to rely on that spirit more than you had ever dreamed of relying on it before. On just the practical side, the great benefits to a mission are learning how to relate with people, developing empathy, because you're coming across people from all stations in life. You're learning how to relate to them effectively. You know, especially in the South, you know, you've got those that would attack you. But for the most part, if you could learn how to deal with conflict and deal with it in a positive way, and come to some understanding with others. It was a great cultural experience. It was a great learning experience in relationships. You know, you're stuck with a companion. Sometimes you don't like them. Sometimes you really click with them. But you have to be able to work together throughout the entire process. And so there's both the spiritual lessons and the life lessons that you could probably get some of those things in other areas, but nothing in the level that you get it there and the intensity that you get it there.
Cool. Cool. What else, you guys, positives that can kind of come through this weirdness of a mission?
You know, this is a kind of practical, pragmatic thing, I think, but missions exist. There is, you know, regardless of what we think about the missionary program or missions, it exists, and it's huge. It's this big, you know, machine. There are people that dedicate their lives to help it work, help it function. There are people for mission presidents to call when a missionary, you know, falls down a well. That's the first thing that came off the top of my head. But there is a machine that is actually a pretty amazing thing. And so I guess a pragmatic approach would be, hey, if you can be part of that, and you can add yourself to it, how cool, right? You know, we don't always need to go around reinventing the wheel. I think Sometimes we can recognize the programs that function and do a lot of things really well. And if there are things that are problematic about it, we can be part of the solution. So, you know, get in there. I say the machine exists. Go ahead, jump in and involve yourself in it. That could be one reason.
You know, I'd like to jump off on that one, just on that machine. One of the really eye-opening experiences for me came at the very end of my mission, on my exit interview. Throughout the 2 years, I had various opportunities to be a leader on the mission, and I had several opportunities to deal with missionaries that weren't doing so well. But there wasn't a single missionary that was sent home from my mission. And my mission president would go to great extent just to avoid sending anyone home. And many times for leaders, that was very frustrating because, you know, we just want them out of our hair. You know, why are we bothering with this? We were 19, we were 20, we were very impatient. And in that exit interview, you know, the mission president was talking about his training before he came out on the mission. And one of the general authorities that was doing the training, he gave him a number, said, you're going to be responsible for X number of converts while you're serving your 3 years as a mission president. And my mission president was a British Airways engineer. He was very meticulous. He was very methodical. He took that number to heart. And he said that, you know, it was only later on in the training that he realized that that number was the number of missionaries that he would be supervising over the course of those 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so it was his responsibility from the church's perspective to send these young men and women out and send them home with those testimonies, to have those conversion experiences so that they would be those strong future leaders of this church. And to the extent that this missionary program cultivates you know, the loyalty and the missionary mindset, and also the leadership capability as these elders and sisters grow into later life, it's a very successful program. Now, I know that there's some concerns with, you know, the five-year retention rate, and there's a lot of concerns out there for, you know, what's going on in the culture now. But for the most part, this has been a very effective program to really help those who are serving become the converts themselves.
Right.
Yeah, and something I think that adds to the power of that machine too is my general feeling, and from my experience, is that the people that are involved in missionary work, the missionaries, the mission presidents, the various other people, the employee church employees, just in my limited scope of meeting, I don't know, a few dozen teachers over the course of my time at the MTC, and even some people on a number of occasions in Salt Lake, I've never met anyone that's like involved in missionary work that just seems to be, you know, this conniving sort of person that is just really cynical. They, for the most part, like, they are really kind and selfless, and they've made a lot of sacrifices to be involved in the work that they do. And, you know, I just think as an MTC teacher, I am the lowest level, I guess, of church employment, or like teach. I don't know. I'm not like a super high up sort of person, and yet all of us, all of my friends and I, my coworkers and I, really feel on a daily basis inspired in little actions, like that we are getting help in the job for that, you know, that one missionary. Every single week, in my meetings, you know, we talk about various individual missionaries that we watch over. And I just see so many good people that are putting their hands all over this thing. And so that's another sign that something is going right in this program. For as much of a corporation as it is, it's shocking at how benevolent everybody is and how generous everybody seems to be with and how truly they're humbly seeking to be inspired by God, which I think is a cool thing.
I would agree. I feel like as much as I felt manipulated on my mission, I think it was always by very well-intentioned individuals and very sincere individuals, individuals that now I am happily friends with. But yeah, I think there is, that's the saving grace for me, is that while there was a abuse of power, it was at least done with good intentions.
That is a complex area to dive into, TK, for sure. Go.
Welcome to my life.
That's right. Interesting. Let's save that for let's save the dive there for a minute. Anything else that jumps out for me? You guys mentioned, working with other people and, getting into their lives and seeing lives and seeing their wrestles and all that stuff. One of the things that just blew me away, and tell me, if this relates to you guys at all. I mean, I never in my life could imagine that I could love people to the level that I first learned and opened, that was opened up to me on my mission. Does that experience that you had, I don't know if it was through praying for them or just, having them constantly on our minds, even just the little things about employment that you're hoping that they'll get, or, an addiction or whatever it is. These people that, were just strangers to me weeks before, I could truly bawl my brains out for hours, practically over by how much I cared for them. That stuck with me forever.
I don't know quite. Go ahead.
No,
I don't want to deflate it,
but I don't remember feeling that. I do know that that being on a mission is a very freeing experience, because you are able to lose yourself and focus on others. And if that's if that's the definition of love and empathy, then yeah, you bend over backwards for them, and you're in a position that you're not ever really in again in your life to just completely focus on them. And that certainly I can relate to that much of it.
I can relate to it. I feel like toward the end of my mission, especially, it just some of the people that I was teaching, I definitely felt a lot of that love for. So yeah, I can relate to that feeling. But I understand that everyone's experience is different.
Yeah, that was just really eye opening to me.
Well, and I've heard that a lot. So to validate, I just, that's what a lot of people say.
Yeah, with you, it was probably hard in the sense that you hardly had as nearly the level of follow-up or the months and months with people the way that a regular PROS mission does.
Yeah, no. Well, and they've changed that a lot. It's been a very, very interesting thing. While I was on my mission, visitor centers went under a radical change where today, starting about midway, was when what we would do is the people that we contacted that requested to have missionaries come and visit them, we then followed through with them and taught them until the missionaries came. Yeah, which could be months. It turns out that there's very, very rarely do the referrals we send out actually make it to the correct place. Very often missionaries will just blow it off. And so,
why?
I don't know. Maybe because they're used to sort of like the really mass produced machine gun sort of like media referrals. And we're like, no, this is different. Like we teach them the first lesson on Temple Square. Temple Square is kind of like a pop-up book, right, of the first lesson. It's like, oh, here is an example of a temple, and here is the statue of Joseph Smith receiving the priesthood. So these people have received the first lesson, but in many cases there are referrals that are kind of like just people ordering a Bible over the phone or something. And so I think, I don't know if they fully differentiate. So it gave us an opportunity to teach even to baptism a lot of people.
Wow. Okay.
But you never knew what they looked like. So he was all over the phone. And So I got back from my mission and tried to plug in a few names, and I was rather surprised.
Oh, what they look like when you did it. Oh, okay, all right.
I was like, oh, that's okay. Okay. But no, you do. So there is a growing potential to have that love. But I think ultimately for me, it was the people that I was able to sit down and talk to over a long period of time that I really did fall into that sort of spiritual love for, which were only the homeless at Temple Square. Those are the ones you see every day. And those, to my day, are some of my closest friends.
That's interesting. Thank you. Anything else that jumps out as in that, like, hey, if you miss out on a mission, you're missing out on an intense period where you could learn X, Y, or Z? Any other thoughts?
I want to take a shot at, I guess, the perception of missions as being totally slave driving or really, really rigid as far as what you're allowed to talk and teach. I feel like the reality, at least that I see, and I could be totally deluded, but the reality that I see every day at the MTC is that we encourage missionaries to just understand what they're teaching and teach, you know, in their own words and from their heart, and not it's not this robotic necessarily thing. I think that it definitely can, that can be a result. I think robots can come out of the missionary program, but I think that that usually happens because what went in was not quite, I think, full or ready enough to really be able to take on the various things. Because maybe there is a default, you know, well, if you don't really know what you're talking about, go ahead and say this. But I feel like the what we all want missionaries to do is learn for themselves the things that they're teaching and then teach honestly and openly. And so I feel like there's sometimes this narrative of the prison or whatever that it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. Now, I know that that is contrary to the experience of a lot of people, and I totally respect other people's experiences, but that's what I've experienced from my mission and from my employment.
And the fact that you don't know, like, there's the great unknown. You don't know what that person will miss, whether it is their spouse or that one convert or person that teaches them. There's just an endless amount of unknowns that we couldn't possibly.
Good.
I want to go dark. Let's go dark.
Well, the one thought I'll share something that really was a turning point in my life, or at least a beginning of one. You know, I was, like I said, nearly 24, and I was, you know, I was a smart guy. I, you know, was articulate. I was used to being, you know, top kid in my class, other than, you know, diving into addiction and all that stuff. I still had this brain, and I was the kid who came out on the mission, and I passed off all my discussions on the first day, you know, just in a big blast to my companion so he could, you know, do it and all that stuff. But to me, my mission president did me the greatest service in the world by basically placing me, my trainer was, you know, and I love the guy, and so I'll just say it though, but he was a hick from Beaver, Utah. You know, farm boy, simple guy. One of his phrases was "Okie dokie, you smoky." You know, so he's just one of these kinds of guys. And you know, I'd say within, you know, the first week or two, I'm just like, what am I doing with this guy? But just humble, good, easy with people, wonderful. I don't know. There was just, it was that moment for me where being smart wasn't nearly as important. Being as articulate wasn't nearly as important. It was like, wow, there are other ways to be good or really, you know, contribute to the world than the particular gifts that I had. And so I don't know that in any other way I could have shifted from what the things that the world can kind of honor, you know, often to just really being thankful for the salt of the earth type folks. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense? So anyway, that was just another piece of my experience that I often would mention that to my mission president in letters. I'm so grateful for, you know, I don't know if I should say his name, you know, so-and-so as my trainer. That's been serving me well my whole mission kind of thing.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.
All is well. All is well. All is well.